Today's show is brought to you by sunscreen. One of us needs to use it more often.
Hey, I use it all the time.
I know that you do. You're not one of them.
I have Neutrogena SPF 100. I keep it in my car for anything. Emergency, planned events, doesn't matter.
A person looks at you, they know you use sunscreen.
Yes, they do.
That's clear. Kelly, on the other hand, one of our producers, look at her.
No, I can't. She's honestly
burned.
Can't.
She's burned to a crisp.
I can only look straight ahead. I can't look over. The minute I look over to that producer's desk and I see what's going on, and I'm not just talking about the sunscreen and
she's
the sunburns.
She's got Tootsie Rolls today.
I'm talking about everything. I'm talking about Weston. I'm talking about Kelly. Anything that's going on over there, it's too distracting. It's too much. It throws me off for the rest of the show, and I can't perform up to my capabilities.
Here's what I like to call PSA, public service announcement. Listen, the sun's coming out. It's getting warmer.
The guns are coming out.
Yeah, everybody's like, oh, all right, I'm going to wear some tank tops. I'm going to wear some nice shorts, all these different things, right? And Kelly is living proof of this. Make sure you
block
some sunscreen on.
Block up Utah. Hashtag
block up Utah. Go to blockuputah.com. I'm selling T-shirts and sunscreen myself, which would be really good if somebody would like to buy those.
Block Up Utah is a good slogan, and it's even better when you consider the logo is you lathered in sunscreen. Just with a weird, creepy grin that you give. Block Up Utah.
If he does it, why don't you? That's the slogan. If he's willing to do it,
why
aren't you?
If he can do it, you can too.
Wear sunscreen.
Okay.
And now, let's be Hive. Looking gay live on a Monday, boys. At Monday, boy, are you alive? My name is Clint Bent.
My name is Chris Rawl.
All right, so we have so much going on.
Hoo boy!
It's a new week, brand new week. Everyone's feeling good, except for Kelly, who is burnt to the crisp, sunburn, aloe vera, skin cancer. All those things are over there.
That's
right
why
here,
we're over here.
Let's focus on us.
Over here, you ain't going to catch a whiff
She's
of aloe vera.
She's 6 feet away.
You know?
We can't get
sunburned. Over here, you can only catch a whiff, Aqua Di Gio, like the good stuff. Like the good
Kelly,
Under Armour sprays.
Don't you wish Kelly, even though she's 6 feet away, I wish she'd wear a mask.
Yeah.
I don't want to get that sunburn on me.
I wish she was wearing a hazmat suit, frankly.
Yeah. It's too intense over there. I'm not looking over there anymore. Rest of the show, I refuse to look over there. It's too intense. So how are you?
I'm good.
You doing okay?
I'm actually really good, yeah.
You've been dating?
Yeah. Yeah. Dates with me, It's just a world that people can't comprehend until they're in it, And it's hard to describe for me verbally. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things. It's like, how do you describe love? And everybody splutters. They go, well, dating me, it's even harder to describe, It takes you into a world your mind can't possibly comprehend. Because it's just,
I wonder what it's like. I'd like to go on
a date.
I'm
not taking you on a date. I know. I know where you're getting at. I know what you're trying to do. I know that you're out here trolling.
Would you be willing to pay for a meal?
Hey,
you sit down, nice little meal.
Are you open on Friday, like maybe around 7 o'clock or so?
I'd like to go to a nice restaurant, go to sit down. You pull the chair out. You push it in as I sit. You come around the other side. You're wearing a clip-on tie because I know you can't tie one.
Hey, I have limitations. I'm a natural man.
And then just, we have a nice conversation. I'll be like, hey, where'd you grow up?
Look, I'm not going to mingle work and love, okay? There's too much at stake. I sit here, I'm going, oh, yeah, I got to worry about the dynamics of me wearing my clip-on tie and my off-camera hours. And then I come on and I got to just put on a brave face, and my insides are churning up. I'm like, oh, how'd that date go? Wonder if things were okay. Wonder about all this stuff.
Well, I just wonder, you look at me, I'm sure, and you're like, oh, that guy knows what he's doing. I'm wondering, do you have any, hey, dating questions? Do you need some dating advice?
I thought you wanted me to give you tips.
No, I'm sure you look at me and you're like, that guy knows.
Yeah. No, I never look at anybody and go, I want advice from that person. Mm-hmm. Never in the history of the world when it comes to virtually anything. Mm-hmm. So dating's in that same category. I never look at anybody because any relationship I see, I go, that looks like it sucks. Mm-hmm. And then I see the next one, I go, yeah, that one sucks too. Mm-hmm. So I never want to approach those people and be like, so how did you get into this really sad state where you watch Netflix every night and argue with one another about, plastic surgery or something? I don't know why that happens.
Whoa.
That was a very real example, yeah.
What type of arguments have you been
having? That's a very real example.
Who are you dating right now? That was so revealing.
Yeah, that was a real life thing. I shouldn't have said it. I regret saying it, and I take it back. If I could go and scrub the record, I would. Unfortunately, I can't.
All right, we have newsletters. We have two new newsletters. One comes out today, newsletter.thebeehive.com. You can check it out or go to thebeehive.com, click on the newsletter. Rachel Swan, the great Rachel, edits this. Who do you know who this week is?
Yeah, guest editor every week. She chooses random people from around, not necessarily even from around the state of Utah, but who have a tie-in with Utah. This week's, which is coming out presumably while we're recording this show, it's from a dude named Kyle Treasure. He works out in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. He's got a bunch of political ties here in Utah. He's actually out there working in politics. And he's trying to jumpstart all these different ways of teaching the upcoming generation about civics and politics and all that kind of stuff. So that's who the guest editor is for today's newsletter. Like you said, you can go and sign up for it at the Beehive. There's also another newsletter that has nothing to do with being civil or politics. And I think you are the one who's kind of kickstarting that.
Yeah, I write that one. It's dearclint.com. Anyone can go there. You just go to dearclint.com, sign right up.
And that comes out every Tuesday, correct?
It comes out every Tuesday and sometimes Friday. So sometimes you get a double dose, sometimes you just get one dose. Similar to the vaccine.
Wait, did you just say sometimes it comes out Tuesday and someday it comes out Friday?
No, sometimes it always comes out on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get an additional bonus one on Friday.
Why do you think that's going to happen?
I'm just saying, sometimes you may.
Like, why are you leaving that door open? Like, it potentially will be used down the road.
At any point you could.
Like, you're going to be sitting there going, you know what I wish I was doing this week? Writing two newsletters instead of one. And so I'm glad that I kept that Friday option open.
I just want to keep it open. Like, I want to have the option of being able to publish on Friday if I so choose.
Okay.
If I so choose. I'm not saying I'm going to, but if I so choose, dearclint.com could come out on Friday as well.
Do you got any teasers for what tomorrow's newsletter may be about?
So I've gotten a lot of responses to my first one, as you know. It's gone viral. I think it's the main thing that people have been talking about on the internet.
BuzzFeed's done a rundown. Yeah. The Daily Beast.
So people have responded. There's been so many responses. I asked people, like, who's been your greatest teacher in your life? And boy, do I have some doozies. And so I got to get in there and I got to be like, no, that's not your best teacher. I am. And explain why I'm a better teacher than like their dad or something.
I like that you're way mad that your prompt actually gave like these legitimate, meaningful responses. And you're like, I was supposed to be the best teacher. How have you guys learned so much when I wasn't even in your life?
Yeah. So we'll go deep on that. We'll go deep on the teacher thing. I got some fanny packs to give away. I do a lot of giveaways. I got to. Otherwise, no one's going to read the thing. You know, so I got to entice people to come in. Like, hey, you want to do this? You want to do this? Okay, so that type of thing. All right. How do you feel about that?
I feel good. I don't need any advice about dating. I know that you're still trolling for that for me in the newsletter.
Why
I'm
don't
not
you ever
do
write me and I'll answer a question on the Dear Clint?
Yeah, I could do that. I could do that.
Why don't you
it might
do
be
it?
More of
a Friday thing. That could be a Friday bonus.
It might be more advice back, you know, so maybe I take over the Friday one and I go, these are all great teachers from all these responses. And I would encourage you all to stick in those paths with those teachers and not go after this other guy. Who doesn't have a lot of things going for him. And he's just looking for, you know, a friend or something.
I like the idea of you doing the Friday one. you may have just got looped in there.
I'm not going to do the Friday one. I'm going to say that right now.
All right, let's see what's going on today in the Beehive. So I've been thinking a lot lately. You know, about life and, you know, the way it's mostly sad, but sometimes, you know, in between you have moments of happiness, different things. One of the moments of happiness that we're all going to have here at the Beehive is we're going to have a few lucky listeners, and four to be exact, who get to come to my house and I'm going to make them a Traeger steak with some Traeger potatoes, with some Traeger corn, and we're going to sit down and we're going to talk. We're going to talk about the big issues of life. And because that's weird, okay, that's already super weird. Because that's weird, we're letting those four lucky listeners each bring a plus one. Because I would not want to experience that solo.
Nope.
And so I want them to feel comfortable and safe with whoever they want to bring. Now, I apologize in advance to the plus ones. Those are the ones I'm most concerned about. Because the lucky listeners, they decided on their own, hey, I want to enter this contest.
Mm-hmm.
The plus ones did not. They're doing a favor for a friend or a significant other or something like that. And so the plus ones are going to be freaked out that they are at my house. I'm going to be freaked out. I've never had anybody at my house in 20 years. Freaked out that they've come to like this house. And it is not a nice house. It's dingy. Okay.
It's dim.
Yeah, it's dim. There's no lights.
It's not well lit.
Yeah, it's candlelight.
Yeah.
And so they're going to be freaked out. But what I want them to think about, and I want what I want you to think about, Chris, and Kelly Shore a little bit, but she's sunburned. I want you to think about what it means to be a human being in 2021. That's going to be like the main conversation we're going to have. It's like, what does it mean to be human today in 2021? Okay. So if you want to be a part of this barbecue and be a part of this discussion, which is going to go off the rails, all you got to do is go to our Instagram account, the BIVHQ. You got to find a barbecue post. I think it's me. It's a picture of me, or at least my face, with a barbecue out there grilling meats. I'm going to be grilling the meats. I'm definitely going to have an apron on. I'm not going to promise anything other than an apron on, but I will have an apron on. And, you know, you come, you get onto that Instagram post and you tag five people. Okay. Now, this morning I'm in the shower, as I do once a week. So I get in the shower and I'm like, all right, this is a big moment for me. I'm thinking about things, and I'm fortunate enough to have like a speaker system where I can play things. Okay. And so I was playing Garth Brooks, of course, and a song came on, The Change. Okay, this is what it says, and I just want you to think about it. Okay, it says, one hand reaches out and pulls a lost soul from harm. All right, I want everybody, let's just stop right there. So imagine, like, this is similar to, have you heard the starfish story where this guy's throwing starfish into the ocean, right? He's just throwing the starfish into the ocean. He's just picking up. There's tons of starfish. There's thousands of starfish on the beach, right? And if they don't get back in the ocean, they're going to die. And so this guy who's like walking along the beach, minding his own business, he's like, man, I'm going to save these starfish. He starts throwing starfish in. Guy comes up and says, what are you doing? You're not going to save all these starfish. Guy picks up the starfish, throws it in the ocean. He looks back at the guy. He's like, I saved that one.
What the hell is happening?
So one hand reaches out and pulls a lost soul from harm. And then it says, while a thousand more go unspoken for, and they say, what good have you done by saving just this one? So this really is like from the starfish story.
Wait, was that a Garth Brooks lyric?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. You're back to that. Okay. Oh, yeah. I didn't know that he was talking about the starfish.
It's like whispering a prayer in the fury of a storm. Who's going to hear it? You're whispering. There's a storm coming down. You've got rain all over. You've got the wind. You whisper a prayer. Who's going to hear it? God. Okay.
Okay.
And the Garth Brooks continues. He says, and I hear them saying, you'll never change things. And no matter what you do, it's still the same thing. Interesting, huh? So it's like the starfish guy again. This A-H comes up and says, hey, you're not going to save all these starfish. Guy like throws one in the ocean. He's like, I saved that one. At the very least, I've done something. What have you done? You're just standing there criticizing me. And then Garth Brooks says, but it's not the world that I am changing. I do this so the world will know that it will not change me. That's what we're going to talk about at this barbecue. And now, why though?
A lot of you are probably sitting there going, wow, they already got to why though early because Clint Betts has been reading Garth Brooks lyrics for the entire start of the show. Oh, no. We have an entire other song prepared to celebrate Country Music Monday, as we do every single Monday on this segment. So, Clint, you know, I know you're getting the old tearjerker Garth Brooks starfish tale and going, oh, you guys ever heard life can't get you down and this and that. We're going in an entirely different direction for Country Music Monday, okay? That was not Country Music Monday. That was not sanctioned by Wido.
No, that was a thought. That was a
personal thought. That was Clint in his shower, naked as can be,
Water running down.
Well, I got my swimsuit.
Garth,
on.
Swimsuit on the bottom, the trunks. Maybe the wetsuit, depending on the day. I don't know what you wear in there.
I was wearing the swimsuit.
But you're in there, and the tears are flowing, and they're mingling in with the water, and you're going, oh. And then Garth Brooks comes on, and you go, is this that song about the starfish? You can make change, but this world isn't going to change me. And then you feel uplifted, and you go about your day, and you show up here for Country Music Monday to discuss an entirely different country song. So, Clint. Don't give me this tearjerker. I want the good stuff, okay?
Okay, I'm going to be honest real quick. The previous segment, I had a pretty busy weekend.
Oh, let me just be really honest here
and
with
so
everybody.
I just made that up on the spot.
Let me be really honest with everybody. You thought I was busy because I talked about how long I was in a shower crying to Garth Brooks, but yeah. I was busy as a bee.
What you just saw as a professional, give it his all, and you didn't even notice a difference. You're like, this is as good as all the ones he's prepared. And you're like, that is a pro's pro. And you didn't think, but a little peel back of the curtain. Well, I just made that up on the spot.
even by our incredibly low standards, that was low. That was even lower.
All right, today's Country Music Monday, Brooks and Dunn. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Brooks. And his name's Kick.
They're two different people.
First name is Kick. Kick Brooks.
Kick Brooks. Checks.
Kelly's saying Kex.
Checks.
Kelly's saying checks. Kelly's, what are you saying? Tootsie Rolls? She's eating a Tootsie Roll.
Checks and Dunn.
Checks.
Kicks
chicks.
And Dunn.
Kicks and Dunn.
I think it's K-I-X like the cereal, maybe.
Okay, Kicks. Kicks Brooks. That's one of them. But Ronnie Dunn is the main guy you need to worry about. I know you want to worry about Kicks. But the main guy you need to worry about is the guy without the hat.
I love the idea that I see these two guys and I'm like, man, I got to worry about Kicks. And you go, no. You got to worry about Ronnie.
You got to worry about Ronnie. Look at our source for that image, CNN.
Like CNN's on the spot. It's some Kicks and Dunn gathering.
What the heck?
Some CNN photographer snapping away. A lot of people think you got to worry about Kicks. You got to worry about Dunn, man.
Yeah, a lot of people are like, you got to worry about the mustache guy with the black hat. No, it's Dunn who does the heavy lifting.
I see that picture, and I know that I'm worrying about the guy with the hair out. Because that hair is...
He's the singer.
It's unique.
Yeah,
you know?
He's very good. All right, so they put out a song called Only in America. Now, if anyone's watched any political rally in their life, this is the song that gets played at the beginning of every single one. When I went before a crowd,
okay,
a crowd in Salt Lake City.
I thought you were going to say Congress. Like you had to go and answer for the Texans of Utah.
No, prior to COVID-19, a crowd had gathered to hear me give a speech. And I took that opportunity to say, maybe I should be the next governor of Utah.
Yep.
And so I got out there and I performed a little bit, maybe you'd say, a little sketch, a little stand-up.
Yeah.
A stand-up comedy.
You're trying to be
governor. You consider me a stand-up comic?
No, I don't. But I consider you a stand-up governor.
What about that open?
Yeah, that open wasn't funny. I hate to be the harsh grader on air. I usually save that for off air, but it wasn't funny at all. It wasn't even emotional. That was what it was supposed to be. Is about a starfish. I don't care if every starfish on Earth died.
The starfish thing.
That's not emotional to me. Some starfish is crying about it being alive or dead. I'm like, you're a starfish. I hate to tell you that.
So I go on stage, and as I'm going on stage, I played this song, Only in America, Brooks and Dunn. Because every politician, when they get on stage, they played this song. Mitt Romney, when he announced his like run for Senate, when he accepted the Senate thing, when he was running for president, this was the song.
How
this is a big song.
How did the crowd receive you when you were like, hey, I think I might be able to, you know, be one of the candidates for governor? Do you think it was a good reception?
No.
Do you think it was there was a booing?
No, similar to what you just said, like this is not fun.
Mm. Was a lot like of fidgeting. Like, does this guy really think he's going to be the governor?
So it wasn't supposed to be that. Like, it's a storytelling event. It's called Strangerville. I think another one's coming up here soon. And you're supposed to go there and, like, tell a story, like an emotional story that has, like, some funny lines in the middle. But at the end, you've made a point.
Like the starfish story.
The starfish story.
The starfish would be a great story
for
this.
That's one I should do, maybe.
But, like, the starfish tells a joke in the middle, and you're like, man, this is like a living creature, too. And that's what you realize at the end.
So that's what you're supposed to do. And so the first three people who performed, they did that, like these beautiful stories of like, all right, this, I'm going to start out with like a little joke. In the middle, you're going to feel like, oh, this person's really cool. At the end, you're going to learn a lesson.
You're going to go, oh.
I come out like in a suit, full suit and tie, like my hair fully slicked back.
Playing
I
only
play
in America.
Brooks and Dunn, only in America, and I come out there and I just womp on the crowd.
Yeah, you womped.
I womped. I womped them so hard. Just like, there was a total curveball.
In the crowd's defense, a crowd doesn't like when they gather and get womped by the speaker. Mm-hmm. You know, they like when the speaker goes, hey, I'm so relatable. You're my friends. I love you. Mm-hmm. You're better than me. Like a little, you know, you talk down. You go, and that's why I'm even lower than you guys. But then you pull it full circle at the end. I think you womped in a way where you go, I'm a lot better than you, and that's why I should be the governor.
Yeah,
you know?
That's actually one of the lines.
Which is,
Did you see it?
That's how you go about running for governor. But mm-hmm. the real candidates that ended up rising to the top, they did it in a much more shrewd manner, you know? Mm-hmm. They did it in the manner where it's like, did that guy just diss on me to, like, say how good he was? I can't remember. He seems like a good candidate, mm-hmm. you know? He seems like he'll cut my taxes or something.
Yeah. If I get in, I'd cut the taxes. That's one of the first things I'd do. All right, so Brooks and Dunn, only in America. It's big in the political circles is the big point of that. All right, here we go. Ready?
Yes.
Sun coming up over New York City. School bus driver in a traffic jam. Staring at the faces in her rear view mirror. Looking at the promise of the promised land.
So I can assure you that no school bus driver has ever done that in their entire existence. I'm not saying it's a bad profession, you know. School bus drivers, I've actually known some. Fine people, you know. I hang out with them on the weekends. That's a way crazy thing to say. I gather up the school bus drivers and hang out with them. I take that back. I have hung out with school bus drivers, but it's just because that's what they were. I was already friends with them before. However, the main point is those school bus drivers, they don't look in their mirror at all these kids. And kids, I mean, they're their own cup of tea. Their parents love them and not a lot of other people do. Mm-hmm. You got to wait until they're adults and that's when you go, oh, okay, this seems like a person more equipped for the world and especially for creating meaningful relationships with other people. A school bus driver is not looking at kids and going, that's the future, man. Like ruminating on it, just, man, that's the future. They're all punching one another. They're like blowing their noses at people. Just weird kid stuff.
That's a president.
You don't look at that and say that. Only in retrospect do people say that. You know, right now we go, oh, man, 20 years ago, I was on a school bus and we were the generation. 20 years ago, my school bus driver, his name was Don, and he'd do these little shoot. He was 100 years old, I swear to you. He couldn't see. That's not an exaggeration. So he's like, he'd look like this because he's trying to squint out anything he could see. And we'd always like shout something, hey, Don, what do you think about this? And he would never talk to us. And he'd just look up in the huge mirror and he'd go, pew, 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 pew. This like playful six shooters right at us. And we go, oh, Don! And I can assure you, Don was not like looking then back to the road and being like, that's the future back there. He's like, I hate these kids so bad. Why are they weighing in on, like, why do they want me to weigh in on things? I'm just here to get a paycheck and go home. I got bigger fish to fry today.
Poor Don. One kid dreams of fame and fortune.
Yeah, that's probably true.
One kid helps pay the rent.
Well, what age are these kids? In my mind, these are fifth graders.
One could end up going to prison.
Well, great. I'll bet bus drivers do think of that.
One just might be president.
Yeah, bus drivers don't think of that.
Only in America, dreaming in red, white, and blue. Only in America where we dream as big as we want to. We all get a chance. Everybody gets to dance. Only in America.
Kids on buses are freaks. Okay? I need to get back to this. Well, Brooks and Dunn are trying to set this great stage of like, oh, wow, there's people from all walks of life, and this person's going to be this and this and this. That is true, but you can't see it in the moment. All you see in the moment are these kids. Like, for example, I'll go back to my bus experience. Every single day, something, like, honestly crazy would happen. And Don would be too mad about it because, like, and for very good reason. Because there'd be, like, a literal fist fight in the middle, and he's, like, trying to drive us. And so now he's like, how do I deal with this? Do I stop? So he'd stop. And he wouldn't ever know what to do. He's like, I can't keep driving until you guys stop doing it. He's just six shoots. But like people are wailing with their fists on one another and the whole bus were just sitting there like. And so one day there was an actual fist fight that was going on. So Don stops and he's like, you guys got to stop. So the fight just ends like because the one kid won and all of us, it was the two biggest people and it is freaky, dude. And we're like, oh my gosh. And instead of like continuing, he was so mad about it. He's like, you guys got to apologize to one another, you know? And the one kid, he's like bleeding. He's like got a bruise on his face because he's gotten wailed on. And all of us were like, I don't know if this is going to happen. So what happens? They just leave. They go out the back exit, the emergency exit. So then the alarms are going off and like a bunch of people just kind of left with them. And
what?
I was still on the best. Yeah, exactly. Like we were in a farm field. And so they just leave and everyone else is sitting there and we're like looking at Don. We're all, do we need to apologize? I don't know. I was like enforced.
Did you leave?
No. I stayed. I'm a buy the book guy. I'm like, I can't get off until Don gives the go ahead. You know, I got to go through the front entrance and he ain't opening that anytime soon. But that was the whole bus. Every single day there's a crazy thing that would go on.
Mm.
And it was never the same people. It's just crazy kids. You know, so the idea that like it's this inspirational place, that's not a school bus. Okay.
Yeah.
That never is a school bus.
Well, they fortunately for you wrote a second verse.
That's unfortunate for me.
Sun going down on an LA freeway. Newlyweds in the back of a limousine.
I hate this song so bad.
A welder's son and a banker's daughter. All they want is everything.
This is so bad, I can't even comprehend it. This is what's played at every political rally?
Yeah. Republican or Democrat.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, keep going. Keep going.
She came out here to be an actress. He was
the banker's daughter?
Yeah, banker's daughter, yeah.
So like,
why does the daughter always have a rich parent in country songs, and the guy is always just some slub a dub,
like a welder?
Can you even make money welding?
I love that this lady.
Is that like a hobby?
So the daughter. First of all, we don't know what the actual banker is.
We don't know
what
welders do.
No. For all we know, this is like a teller at Nebo Credit Union, and their daughter went to Los Angeles. And was like, I'm going to try to hit it big on the big screen and meet some other guy who's like, I'm getting way into welding. Where should I go to perfect my craft? Los Angeles. Because this is the country of promise. You know?
It would be cool to be a welder because you got the cool mask.
Dude, welders are actually baller and they make good money. Little known fact.
Yeah, welders are probably, they probably are better off than bankers.
They're way better off than bankers. This song is trying to...
Okay, so the son's the rich one.
Yes, that's why she's attracted to the son.
Yeah, for his money, marrying up.
A banker's daughter will only marry a welder better.
Typical story.
I always see welders, I'm like, ugh. Just getting all the girls that I can't have.
She came out here to be an actress. He was the singer in a band. They just might go back to Oklahoma and talk about the stars they could have been.
So this guy sounds so cool. A singer in a band and a welder.
He's
like,
cool.
Can you think of two cooler things?
Why would you go to L.A.?
Professional on the weekend making buku bucks. Or no, professional on the weekday making buku bucks. Singer on the weekend, you know, just wandering around Los Angeles making it.
Hey.
Making hay, dude.
Yeah.
He just does that for love, probably.
And then they say, only in America where we dream red, white, and blue. Only in America where we dream as big as we want to. We all get a chance. Everybody gets to dance. Only in America. Yeah, only in America where we dream in red, white, and blue. Yeah, we dream as big as we want to.
Can you imagine Brooks and Dunn sitting down together? I'm assuming this is a co-writing effort when it comes to their lyrics.
Nope, just Dunn.
Oh, it's just
Dunn. That's what I said. That's my point. Yeah, I knew you'd be worried about Kicks. I knew you'd be worried about Kicks. That's
so
why...
Kicks is Garfunkel? He's Art Garfunkel?
That's why I tried to tell you, you don't need to worry about Kicks.
He's just a pretty voice on the side that you can do
He's
without.
Not a voice!
What is
he? Ronnie's the voice!
Is he a bassist? What is he?
He's a guitarist.
Is he lead guitar? Is he just rhythm?
No, he's second. He's second chair.
So does...
He's a second chair
Does
guitar.
Brooks play guitar as well? Is it a dual guitar outfit?
Yeah, you're talking about Dunn.
Dunn. Do they have a backing band?
Dunn went solo. They both went solo after a little while. Dunn had a successful solo career, much like Simon and Garfunkel, actually. Dunn had a successful career. Kicks, not that successful.
I blame the hair.
You're thinking of the wrong...
I'm thinking... Sorry, I'm thinking of Ronnie.
Ronnie, the hair did great.
Ronnie's what threw me off. I knew him by their one names, but now there's too many more names.
Ronnie can sing.
Ronnie can sing.
He really can. This song sucks. When you hear it sung, you're like, that's good.
Yeah,
Yeah, is that Ronnie? That. Okay. If it was Kick singing it, then we wouldn't even be talking about
it. So who's the lyricist? Ronnie?
Ronnie, I doubt either of them.
Here's where this song freaks me out. Because it's bad. It's so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it's one of the country songs that it's got the catchy tune and they sing in the traditional country twang. And so everybody just hears the music with the way that the words are sung and they go, That's a great old-fashioned country song, and we love it. And then if you think about the lyrics for even 2 seconds, you want to throw up because you go, this is so bad, I can't even believe that I thought this song was good. And once that comes to be in your mind, you could never listen to that song again. However, where I find this song to be very interesting is Ronnie, who is the writer.
Yeah.
He's probably holed up in a hotel for a couple days, you know, Bob Dylan style, and he's writing out. He's
coked out of his mind.
Coked out of his mind, you know, just going, oh my gosh, this is going to be the big breakthrough for me and Kix.
He ends up being right.
And he ends up being right, to his credit. But he scribbles out all these lyrics, and he's going, I should switch this line out. Oh, a welder, that's a great profession. And he finishes it, and he's got to go into the studio, okay? And rather than just being like, all right, let's just sing, and here we go, I'm sure he's got to go, all right, Kix, here's the lyrics. You know, just give them a quick read through. And if I'm the guy who's there on the side, and I go, they're on a school bus.
Sun coming up.
So the sun's coming up. That's like your main image. Okay. No, and then there's a banker and a welder.
I'll be Ronnie. I'll be like, so this is how it goes. Sun coming up over New York City.
Is it a boy band? Is that how it's sung?
I think so. I don't know. And then Kix is
like Justin Timberlake with Kix and Dunn.
Like, we're in Nashville, dude.
Yeah. I think it would be very intense to pass those lyrics off to your mate. I really do. Because if I'm Kix, I go, yeah, these are really bad. But in the back of your mind, you're like, I can't do better. I'm the like total side piece.
In downtown New York City, they have school bus.
I don't know. I don't know if that's true. I don't know. I don't know a lot about New
York
City.
They do the school bus?
I've been there twice. I haven't seen a school bus.
I haven't seen a school. I don't even think they have kids.
That's probably the best part about New York City.
Interesting.
It's a haven for adults, dude. Once you become an adult, you can go to New York City. Kids, elsewhere. Get out of here.
You know what? I talked to someone really amazing. Okay. Ben Hodson for Silicon Slopes. So I'm going to talk to Ben Hodson, but now first a quick word from our sponsor, Chatbooks.
I used to be a busy mom. Now I'm a homeschooling, hand sanitizing, mask applying, social distancing busy mom. I was so bored before. The last thing I need is the added stress of printing family photos. Fortunately, I use Chatbooks, the app that automatically turns my Instagram photos into adorable photo books. Think about all those photos you've already posted to your Instagram account. That's a whole collection of Chatbooks waiting to happen. Just connect to your account, review, and order. Holy sweet Meghan Markle, it worked! Chatbooks. Live your life and let Chatbooks print it one $10 book at a time.
I'm here with Ben Hodson, the CEO and co-founder of Job Nimbus. Ben, thank you so much for coming on. First, tell us, what is Job Nimbus?
We are the most popular software for roofing contractors in America and very big in home exteriors in general. So anything on the outside of a house, that's the type of customers we work with. And we do all the customer relationship management and project management for those companies. So you can track a job from start to finish. But really what we are is a growth engine for these customers. Our average customer grows 43% just in the first year they use Job Nimbus.
That's amazing. So that's an interesting and fascinating idea, actually, particularly like focusing on roofers and then everything, expanding from there, from anything outside of the house, anything on the exterior. How'd you come up with that as the market you wanted to dive into?
Yeah, when I first, I'm a longtime software guy. Actually, Job Nimbus is the 10th company I've started. So
that's awesome. That's very cool.
I actually had some really big successes. And a lot of failures along the way too, things that didn't work. That's just an entrepreneur's life. But I learned a lot more from the things that didn't work out. But I didn't know anything about contracting. That's not something I thought about, right? And I met up with some roofers down in Colorado, myself and my two partners, Nick and Jason. And I realized after talking to them for just a little bit that nobody that was good at software was trying to solve their problems. All of the software in the industry back in 2013 in construction in general, it's actually very similar today. It's still built by other contractors, not by software people. And they struggle to really get good user experiences. And we came into the market and decided to build a CRM to start with. And then we built on a project management suite afterwards. And really just how can we help these guys manage their whole business? The problem we were trying to solve is that we realized that the smartest people in America that were doing software were trying to figure out how to make Twitter run faster. And the poor roofer was like the forgotten man, if you ask me. And we want to do something more noble with our software skills, I think. And we saw that they all struggle to run their business. They're very good at their trade. A lot of them struggle to run a really great business. And so they struggle to achieve their dreams, to actually grow at the level they want to grow. And we said, oh my gosh, this is a problem that really inspires me. It's something that they're entrepreneurs like I am. So I feel a kinship with them. I know a lot about a business because I've done a lot of different things. How could we help them run their business better? And then of course, by virtue of that, because anybody that's worked with a contractor knows that it's a rough ride a lot of times. We could also fix homeowner experiences too. Like you have a great contractor, a job name as contractor will be the best contractor you ever work with as a homeowner. And that is something that's super meaningful and motivates the whole company. In fact, our mission is make contractors heroes. Super simple.
I love that. I love tech companies that focus on solving real problems. Like it's very clear what John Nimbus does. You know what I mean? Like half the time we're talking to tech companies, it's like, I'm not exactly sure what you do. Still.
Yeah.
But I get this. And well, honestly, and
go ahead.
My dad was a roofer. My dad, early on, growing up. And so I remember being out there, helping him. Like I'd get on the roof and I'd, you know, do the very last nail on each of the shingles and stuff. And it's very cool. It's a cool profession, actually. I really like it.
Most of the guys in that sector are repair, remodel, R&R type people. And I think it's a very noble thing. There's a lot of ways to make money in the world. I want to do something that makes money but does good in the world. That's what I'm looking for. And I think that roofers and just construction in general is a very noble trade. It's something you'd be proud of. It builds things. It fixes people's lives. It makes people's lives better. I just love to be a part of that. And we think that we're a part of that in the terms of what our mission is and how we're helping them achieve that.
I love that. Again, I just love tech companies that solve real problems, and I love the job Nimbus is doing that. I have to ask you, though, I see the guitar in the background. I'm told that you used to be, or you probably still are, like you're a musician, you're recording songs, and then you become an entrepreneur. How did that whole transition happen?
Yeah. There's a book actually recently that I read called Range. Are you familiar with that, Clint?
Uh-uh. No, I got to check it out.
Man, who's the guy that wrote it? Well, anyways, let me keep going here. So one of the premises of the book is that if you go super deep on one thing, you're not as powerful and useful as a person as if you go deep on a lot of things and have a broad range of skills. And so it's interesting because I'll go way back. When I was in high school, I grew up in Seattle. And actually, I graduated in 1994, so I was there during the grunge movement. And I mean, I played in a grunge band at the time, right? I was taught myself guitar. And when I wanted to start a band, I wasn't very good at guitar. And so I had to convince other people to come play with me that, you know, none of the good musicians want to play with me, right? They were already playing with people way better. So I went to like my best friends and I said, hey, I really think that you should learn bass. And hey, I think you should learn drums, and convinced them to come and play in this band with me. I found a girl who's just an awesome singer, but she was doing more like opera and choir stuff. Convinced her she should do rock vocals because I wasn't a good singer at the time. Still aren't great. And built a band. We played for the next 3 years and played shows every week. And we practiced every week, several times a week. They devoted their whole life to this cause. And it was because I had this dream of having a band. And I think they were super glad and super proud of what we did during that time. We're a little band called Honeysuckle. And to cap it all off, we actually recorded a CD. Now that sounds cheesy now, but it was 93, I think, when we recorded it. And nobody at the time was recording CDs of our age. You had to be on a label, but we self-published it. I figured out how to, we rented recording gear and just spent 3 days recording. That was all the money we had. And then we I figured out how to get the CD pressed, how to get it mastered. I didn't know any of this stuff. I actually go to the library and check out books on like how to record. I'm trying to figure stuff out. It's not the best recording, Clint, but I'm really proud of it. Actually, the songs are pretty good. And then we put that out. I made, I think, 3,000 CDs, if I remember right. And here's the deal, always the entrepreneur, and I didn't think of myself at the time that way, but I went to my band and I said, do you guys want to put money in on this? They're like, no. Great, I'll put up all the money, but I get all the profits for the CD, and you guys can have a few CDs to keep. And they said, oh, that's great, love it. Mm-hmm. So I ended up selling all those CDs, and it paid for my first like 2 years of University of Washington. I went to UW to get a business degree, and then later for a computer science degree, two bachelors. So it ended up being like a great thing for me. And I have this like super cool thing, but I look back now and I go, wait, that was like me starting a business and helping other people see a vision and what can we do together? We can be greater together. And I think my whole life I've been doing that. So that's, that kind of started me on the path of musicianship.
Do you still play?
I've done a lot of other things there too. Yes, I still play. I put out music under the band Rail Yard.
Yes.
Like where trains go to die. And I got really into bluegrass and old timey music in like the early 2000s. I love the Depression era songs, the Carter Family. So I learned how to play banjo, mandolin, dobo, resonator, a bunch of different instruments. And I got much better at singing. We did a lot of three-part harmony. It was a really special experience. Our claim to fame, Quinn, is that we got asked to play the Seattle Folklife Festival, which is like the biggest festival in that area. We got to play on one of the main stages, and it was the biggest crowd I've ever played to. There was many, many thousands. I don't know the exact number there, but we had people singing along with some of our songs. I was like, okay, I made it. This is like pinnacle for me, you know?
That's so cool. So Job Nimbus, how's it going?
It's going really well. We started back in 2013. We did it bootstrapped. I've raised money on other companies, and I really wanted to do this one with no investor and get it to a point where it was really a going concern. And we hit the $10 million in annual recurring revenue mark last year, and that was a good trigger for us to go raise money at the right valuation. And we raised $53 million, which is by far the biggest round ever seen in home exteriors or roofing software in history. And now we're off to the races. We have almost 140 employees right now and just massive growth right now. We're really achieving the vision that we want of making these contractors heroes.
I love it. Job Nimbus, jobnimbus.com, right? Is that how people find you?
That's exactly right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Check this out, Ben. We got to have you back on. I could talk to you forever, particularly about your journey as a musician to an entrepreneur and everything you're working on. So definitely come back. That's Ben Hodson, the CEO and co-founder of Job Nimbus. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thanks, Clint. Good to talk to you.
Likewise.
That was Ben. I love Job Nimbus. Super interesting platform, interesting company, a little bit different than you normally see in a tech company.
Okay.
Jobnimbus.com. That was Ben Hodson. That was their CEO. You know, a phrase that I like that when they use, and he used it there towards the end of the interview, going concern. He said, I wanted to make this a going concern. I love when people do that.
That's the main line that you like.
That's a cool phrase.
So I've never heard any music from Ben based upon just what he was saying and this nice worse usage of words. I can't even talk. I feel very comfortable saying he's a better musician than Brooks and Dunn.
Yeah.
Who we talked about on the prior segment.
There's no question.
We've already immediately found a better musician the same show.
Way better.
And he has a company that's doing well.
Oh, excellent.
It's
company.
A double
140
whammy.
Employees. Ben Hodson, check out Job Nimbus. And now, no ball.
So the weekend that was, Clint, in the world of sports was very, very, very special. It was the Masters, which is the biggest golf tournament of the entire year. Okay. And Hideki Matsuyama is your 2021 Masters champion.
He's a really great golfer. Came out of, like, he's been doing well, right?
Really good golfer who has not won at the highest level. The first Japanese male to win a major. And it was something that resonated with me for two specific reasons. And both of them are, they're touching me deep in my soul and how I watch sports and what I love. The very first one that I want to talk about is the he can't win mantra that gets passed upon player to player, team to team, all this kind of stuff in sports. It's the number one thing that I argue most vehemently against in my life as a sports fan. And I always argue on behalf of there's so much that a player or a team can't control. And I think we forget that so many times. And we like to boil it down to simple black and white terms of this player lost, and so he's bad, and this player won, and so he's good. And it really manifests itself in every sport, and in this instance, in the world of golf, where Hideki Matsuyama, there became this mantra that was attached to him, and it was simply, Hideki can't win, right? And that was something that everybody always said, like kind of making a joke. Hideki can't win, Hideki can't win. And you would see that pop up the further his career went along. So he comes onto the scene in 2011, okay? He's the low amateur at the Masters that year. Really cool story, right? Comes from Japan. He's supposed to be kind of the standard bearer for Japanese golf moving forward. They didn't have that, right? And so he's the low amateur at the 2011 Masters. He's all sorts of celebration. One of the premier ball strikers we've seen in the last decade. One of the greatest chippers of the golf ball around the greens that we've seen in the last decade. And one of the worst putters consistently on tour over the course of the last decade. So you kind of have this war within his own game. And the statement about Hideki was, he's such a world-class ball striker that he's always going to be floating around these tournaments because he's so good at that. And if he ever gets the week where his putter's, you know, not even hot, but just reasonable, or if it's hot, then you're going to get wins, right? So we go over the course of 2011 up until 2011 in this past weekend, right? And at first, he doesn't win until 2014. And so he gets the moniker. This guy... prodigious talent, but can't win. He can't win the big one, you know, the thing that I hate the most, okay? So he ends up winning in 2014, not a major, and he accumulates five PGA Tour wins from 2014 to 2017, okay? And normally, you look at something like that, and you go, okay, we probably should start celebrating the part of the player that's really manifesting itself, these things that he is world-class at, instead of always honing in on, like, well, now he's won, but instead of just going, this guy has won PGA Tour events and can win a major if things break right, instead the mantra became, Hideki can't win the big one. So now we're making fun of his major performance, which included seven major top tens at the time, right? Which shows he's consistently floating around these events in the most loaded of fields. And instead of going, this guy's really good and he can win, he just hasn't. It turned into this growing weight upon the shoulders and the public perception and the media machine. They all combined into just hammering it home of Hideki Matsuyama can't win, can't win, can't win. Hideki can't win, right? We're seeing that happen in present day with, you know, one of our most famous golfer in Utah, Tony Finau, who has been an incredible tour player over the course of the last 5 years. And rather than a celebration of all of the really good things that Tony does and the fact that he's continually in contention in the biggest tournaments and the biggest majors. I mean, he's top 10 this week at the Masters again. Instead of that, Tony's one of the standard bearers for this combination of public perception and the way the media covers sports, which is Tony Finau's a loser. He doesn't have the winning gene. We've seen it with Xander Schauffele, who was in contention down the stretch and made a huge triple on 16 when he got within two strokes of the lead. And Xander Schauffele's in the exact same boat that Tony Finau is, the exact same boat that Matsuyama was in the past of, this guy is a world-class golfer. He's consistently in every single tournament. Xander's won a couple more PGA Tour events than Tony, but he hasn't won a major. And so rather than celebrating this guy who's awesome and scintillating to watch, we go, okay, now we got to start questioning Xander. He finished second to Tiger in 2019 in the Masters. And he had the lead briefly on the back nine that year. And then kind of, you know, he didn't win, which instead of just saying this guy didn't win, it always has to be he wilted. He wasn't big enough for the moment, which sometimes may be true. And sometimes it's just as simple as this other person came and seized the tournament, right? So we see it again on Sunday with, you know, the way that Xander's talked about. And circling back to Matsuyama, it's crazy to me how we can't fully celebrate what a player is until they've won at the highest level, right? We see that in every sport. We see it in basketball, football, you name it. We see it in golf where Matsuyama's name is brought up prior to Sunday, and one of the main talking points is always, yeah, that guy's crazy talented, but he just can't win because he hasn't won at the highest level, which is, again, an argument I always get into. Because somebody hasn't won doesn't mean they can't. I had a segment last week talking about Chris Paul, who is probably going to end his NBA career without an NBA championship. That's not because he's not up to the task. That's not because he's not a winning player. That's not because he's incapable of winning an NBA championship. It's just because he hasn't been in the right situation or hasn't had the right breaks, or sometimes through his own fault hasn't won, right? And there's so many complexities that come into a player's performance and how it relates to winning either a team event, which you can't control 90% of what's going on around you, whether that's coaching, whether that's management, whether that's your own teammates, or in golf, when you're playing against a loaded field of other individual golfers, you are one against 100 other people who are just as talented and good as you. And if you do that math on that, like, there's four majors a year. You know, you play for 10 years, that's 40 majors. You're going against people that are just as good as you over the course of that time. Statistically speaking, you probably shouldn't win a major, honestly. So Matsuyama's win, it spoke to me because people immediately went, okay, now Matsuyama's a winner. Let's talk about let's completely whitewash the way that we used to talk about his career and instead contextualize it by, well, we can celebrate everything he's done over the course of the last 10 years because now he's a winner. And we knew that all along he possessed the traits that would allow you to win in a major championship. But now that we've actually seen it happen, we can celebrate that. Okay. So the second part of this that really resonated with me emotionally and was really like a hard, stark reminder of what I love about sports. There's an article that was in ESPN by Mark Schlabach. And I just want to read to you the start of this because it's kind of the start. Actually, it's kind of the middle point of Matsuyama's journey into this really, really cool moment that happened yesterday. So here's the start of the article. At the 2017 PGA Championship at Quail Hollow, after Japan's Hideki Matsuyama led at the turn and then bogeyed five of the final nine holes to finish in a tie for fifth, he buried his head in his hands and cried after an interview with a Japanese reporter. End quote. So this is kind of Matsuyama at the middle point of his career. 2017 was kind of the end of his hottest stretch of golf, 2014 to 2017. He was in contention on the back nine, like he was leading a major. He has the entire weight of his country on his shoulders. He has the entire weight that just a person has of themselves when they've worked so freaking hard to try and do something, whether that's at a professional level or at an amateur level. Like, anybody who's done something for a long time can feel that, you know? You have it in your own life, whether that's as a professional building a business, whether that's me as an amateur golfer and trying to get better. It doesn't matter what it is. Everybody has the thing or things within their life where they go, man, I've sunk years and years or decades even into doing this thing. And I hope that it will manifest itself at some point in the highest possible form for me. And most times it actually doesn't, right? And so you kind of have to embrace the journey more than the result, because as grim as it is to say, most times the result does not match up in your mind with your own capabilities, okay? So on a professional level, that's just winning. And as a professional golfer, that's winning a major. So he's there, he's crying after this PGA Championship. And he goes on like a 4-year stretch where he's not winning. He's not finishing in top tens in majors. And it just kind of seems like we're ready to pass on. We have a lot more younger golfers who have the same traits and qualities as Matsuyama. And we're more excited about them because they're the newer thing, you know? So we have Tony Finau, we have Xander Schauffele, we have all these young people. Jordan Spieth rises up and wins majors. Brooks Koepka, you can go down the list of all these people. And Matsuyama kind of gets pushed to the back burner because what was once young and promising is now just, he hasn't won a major, we're a decade in, we don't really care, right? So he comes down the stretch on Sunday. He's leading by two on 18. He makes an easy bogey on 18 to clinch the tournament, right? And this is always a moment that, like, I really, really, really get into. You can go down the list of when people win their first championship or major or whatever it is, whatever the sport, like the most iconic moments and the ones that really, truly stick out to me emotionally are like seeing these moments. A good example is for those of you who watched The Last Dance with Michael Jordan over this summer, and it traces his entire journey with the Chicago Bulls. The moment that stood out the most to me, it wasn't his first championship, I believe in 1991. It was his third championship in 1993. His dad had passed away. And there's this shot that they have that we had never seen before, which we'd always seen pictures of him on the ground, like cradling the Larry O'Brien trophy and crying. And in The Last Dance, we see like an extended shot of him like sobbing and heaving. Okay. And again, contextualized by He had just gone through this entire emotional grind. The documentary sets up like this guy's kind of isolated because of how popular he is. He can't go anywhere without just being mobbed. And his dad had passed away in like under these really tragic circumstances. And so that's the number one thing out of everything that was shown in that show. And that's one of the like main things that I think about when I think about people winning. It's the moment like that. It's LeBron after he won in 2016 with Cleveland, not his first title, but like the city's first championship in 50 years, a homegrown kid. And like him screaming, "This is for you, Cleveland," and like him sobbing on the floor when the ball's on the air. Like these are the ones that really stick out. So Matsuyama, who's very reserved and like people don't know a lot about him in his private life, and because he wants it that way, especially at home, the Japanese press, by all accounts, like he's the golden child. They want to know everything. And he's just like, "I can't, this is like too much for me almost," you know, whether that's pressure, whether that's just, I don't want to have to deal with that. It's too much. And so Matsuyama taps in. On 18. And so he starts going through the thing, which I always watch really closely because I'm just like, I love seeing the moment where an entire person's life's work is boiled down to an individual moment and it goes their way. Okay. So now we're watching Matsuyama and I'm just like, this is going to be crazy. Like, I just kind of want to see how he is emotionally and what this moment means to him. So, you know, he's going through the handshakes with the caddy, his playing partner, Xander, his caddy and that kind of stuff. And so CBS, which is running the broadcast, they have this, for those of you who've watched the NFL this last year, they've introduced this new cam. It's like this 8K cam where it looks like this incredible thematic film shot almost, right? Like something you would see in a Paul Thomas Anderson film. So it hones in on the subject and it kind of blurs out a little bit of the sides of what's going on around them. Much like if you have an iPhone, the way that the portrait mode is, or a Samsung or anything like that, right? So it's Matsuyama in the highest possible quality and he's coming off the green. And like, I started getting chills when he very first is coming off because you start seeing it like going through his face of like, okay, I'm a major champion. And so he goes to the group of people that are like his close friends, his coach. And he starts like giving hugs and you can start to tell that the moment is like a little too big and understandably so. So he's starting to just get the like, oh man, like I can't believe this happened. And so I'm getting goosebumps watching this already because I'm just like, oh, I love moments like this. Like this is the most real possible thing you can see broadcast on television, you know, for all of the television shows and movies that we watch and for all of the trashy reality TV where we go, oh, this is so funny on The Bachelorette. Like there are very few moments that you can watch. And this is why sports appeal to me so greatly. There are very few moments that you can watch where you just go, I understand what that person, why this means so much. And I understand like what that person is going through in some small way. Right. So the part that like really, really resonated, CBS stays there with the camera. So rather than cutting away and stuff and doing all sorts of things that a broadcast normally do, they're just sticking there. So now it's this extended like minute and a half long shot of Matsuyama walking from the green to go and sign his scorecard in where they go and sign their scorecard. So he's walking through now like a huge group of fans and stuff, and it has this camera and you can just see him and everything else is kind of blurred out. So it's this incredible moment where you get to see almost like, I'll go back to a Paul Thomas Anderson film. It's like watching Daniel Day-Lewis at his finest moment because this is not acting and this is the realest you'll see from the person. And so Matsuyama's face, like I would highly encourage, we can't show it on the show for obvious copyright reasons. You can go and find this online, but like go and watch this. It's like a minute and 30 seconds of Matsuyama going from the green and walking to sign his scorecard because he walks through these fans. And his face is just like, he's going through, you can tell he's welling up. And then he's looking down at the ground and he's like, there's shock. There's awe. There's like a realization. There's a dawning of I'm a Masters champion, but like, oh my gosh. And he just has all of the emotions that go into, hey, this is my life's work. And it finally has manifested itself in a way that it rarely does for anybody on planet Earth. So that's the thing that like more than anything stood out to me as I'm watching. I can still, just talking about it, I have goosebumps. When I was watching it, I was like, it was like I was watching a Daniel Day-Lewis scene, right? And it was something that was amazing. So the last thing I'll say about the Masters, and this is emotionally a right turn, because there's this incredible moment, and the scene is set for just this like, wow, let's talk about Matsuyama and everything that I've been talking about, this entire journey and this the public perception, the media machine, everybody saying you can't do it. And the Masters, which it can never have enough of itself. They always have to go through the great ceremony. It's called Butler Cabin, which is where they go in and they have Jim Nantz, who's a very corny fellow. And he sits down, and they bring the past Masters champion. So for this year, it was Dustin Johnson. And they pass off the green jacket. And it's a very uncomfortable ceremony, right? So you have this stark contrast of going from Matsuyama, like, truly an emotional and incredible moment to watch as a viewer. And then, you know, they come back from commercial break, and he's sitting down in Butler Cabin. There's pictures of Matsuyama from when he was the 2011 amateur, because they'll bring the low amateur in there, and he's just this tiny little scrawny Japanese kid. You know, he looks like he's 10 years old, and he's shaking hands, and you can tell he's just, the moment's a little too big for him. And then you have present day, where Matsuyama's getting the green jacket, and it's him 10 years later, and it's just like, oh, this would be normally like a really cool moment to concentrate on, but instead you got Jim Nance fluffing up everything. You got Dustin Johnson there, who's just this weird robot guy, and he's expected to like perform some ceremonial passing of the jacket to Matsuyama, and it turns into this incredibly uncomfortable ceremony, and it is every year, okay? And so now you sit and kind of watch that, and I'm like halfway through it, I go, I got to get out of here. Like, I was still riding the high from Matsuyama's walk, and I can't believe that the Masters can never just leave it at that. I can believe it, but I wish that it was different. You know, I wish they were kind of separated by, you know, 30 minutes or something, where like you had all of that emotional stuff, you gave it time to resonate and to set in. And instead it's just kind of this hard right turn where you go, man, that was the best thing I watched, followed by kind of the worst thing that I watched. So that's just a weird observation that I made and that kind of stood out as well. But like, this was a really cool tournament. Down the stretch, it wasn't as close as you would have liked. There was a brief moment on 16 when it seemed like things were going to, you know, go, okay, this is going to be a real tournament. Xander hits it in the water and Matsuyama is able to go through. But like, I will always remember this tournament for that walk, because that's one of those moments that you don't get very often. You don't even get every year, honestly, when I watch sports, and I watch pretty much everything. I could probably pick out less than 10 moments that like really stand out to that degree, where I go, oh man, that was not only shot in such a cool way and CBS gave it room to breathe, but like everything that I know about that player and everything that I personally argue about when it comes to winning and losing in sports, all of those things came to a head, and they broke in that player's favor, and they broke in the favor of someone like me who argues on behalf of winners can lose and losers can win, and there's a lot of breaks that go into that. Like, Sunday was a really cool encapsulation of all of those things.
The Masters is such a cool event.
It's phenomenal. It really is.
It really is. It's such an amazing event. Also in Georgia, where the All-Star Game was supposed to be.
Yeah, I think there was some sort of controversy about people wanted the Masters moves or something. I don't know. I can't follow the controversies. You're the one who feeds them to me.
You can't move the Masters. It's always in Augusta.
Hey, if the Masters wants to come to Utah, I got a course. I got two courses right next to
the Masters at that point.
We got Timpanogos Golf.
Has the Masters ever been anywhere other than Augusta?
No. We got Timpanogos Golf Course in Provo, Spanish Oaks Golf Course in Spanish Fork. Okay? Two prime venues.
And now, dear... If you have a question or comment or would just like some advice from yours truly, go to Dear Clint, or don't go to Dear Clint. You can go to DearClint.com, read the weekly newsletter. You can also email me or us at DearClint@TheBeehive.com. You can call us to that number. You can text us to that number. You can hit us up on social media at TheBeehiveHQ. Use the hashtag Dear Clint. Here is today's Dear Clint. It goes like this. Dear Clint, I've often wondered what it means to be a man. I've tried my darndest, but boy, have I struggled to figure it out. It's almost like I'm not supposed to figure it out, like I'm destined to be confused and desolate for the remainder of my life. Destiny isn't something to be trifled with. My question to you is this: why does Major League Baseball have replay?
So that first part really seems tailored to you, you know?
That's intense.
I've heard a lot of those musings coming from you. Especially the like, what am I going to do for my destiny? What do you think my destiny
is? Intense.
You're always asking me what your destiny is. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a good answer.
You ever think about destiny?
Not really. No.
I think about it a lot.
Well, what happens when you think about it?
Well, just that. Can't trifle with destiny. Most likely you're destined to fail.
So if you can't trifle with destiny, what's the point of worrying about destiny? That's always the question.
What's the point about worrying about anything?
Yeah, I know. That's what I say, not you. You're the one who always worries. I'm the one who poses the correct question.
What's the point about
Don't force feed my question back to me.
Gotcha.
What is the point about worrying about everything?
I love that first paragraph. That was beautiful. Didn't you think?
Yeah.
Even like the writing itself I thought was really good. But the question was not anything to do with the first paragraph. It was, why do they have replay in Major League Baseball? You are a big proponent of no replay.
Take it away.
As I
Take it away 100%
it.
In every sport.
You don't like replay in Major League Baseball either.
I want no replay in anything.
Mm-hmm.
It is a stain upon all sports. It really is. This is my main.
Well, what do you do when it costs?
No, listen, this is my main takeaway. I've lived both lives, okay? We've had replay, depending on the sport, we've had replay for years and years, depending upon the sport, okay? The prior 20 years of my sports watching existence, there was no replay whatsoever. And so there were games and moments that were very frustrating because of blown call, and I go, this cost it, oh my gosh! And there was always moments that would make me angry. However, in present day, with replay, I'm significantly more angry because not only does replay just completely screech the pace of play to a halt, they don't get it right with instant replay. Okay. Mm. A very good example is last night's Sunday night baseball game between the Braves and Phillies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Phillies score in the top of the ninth inning to go up 7-6. It's ruled a run on the field. The guy's sliding in a home plate, catcher blocks him, you can't really tell, seems like. They rule it a score. Then you go to replay, which the umps go and replay the play. And you can clearly tell that he does not touch home plate and score. And instead they come back and they go, yeah, that's actually, it's just a run. Sure, we'll go with it. So now you're 10 times angrier because you had normal people with eyes go, yeah, we just watched the same replay that everybody saw and decided that, yeah, let's just let the call on the field stand. That's way more frustrating. Another good example is in this most recent Masters, Abe Anser, who is a professional golfer. He gets assessed a 2-stroke penalty retroactively for touching the sand in a sand trap when he's trying to hit the ball, which you could not pick up with the naked eye, and was only found via replay way after the fact on a zoomed-in 4K camera shot where he touches 2 grains of sand on his backswing. Like I promise you, it doesn't matter if you're a professional amateur, how much you've golfed, you are not going to feel that on your backswing. You would not know what happened. So, like, if you want that person to assess this penalty themselves, you wouldn't know what happened.
Wait, I don't even get the penalty.
The penalty is on your actual swing, you can't touch the sand when you're coming back. Okay? You can't put your club down there and do that.
Why?
It's just one of the weird, bizarre rules of golf. The main point is, if you actually did it and were going to assess the penalty yourself, you would have had to have felt it. The only way you can do something like that is by going into this tiny, weird replay and going, you know what? I'm glad that we have replay at our disposal so we can go and assess a penalty like that. That's not what I want.
Mm.
That's never what I want. Replay is almost never applied correctly. How many times do I have to watch an NBA game where we take a 5-minute stop to determine
Replay's
what's a
ruined.
Flagrant foul and what's not?
It's
trash.
NBA.
It's all trash.
It's ruined the NBA for sure.
It's ruined everything. I don't want to watch it. I don't want to sit there and watch NFL refs stare into a tiny miniature screen for 10 minutes to determine what was pass interference. You don't know. Nobody knows.
I can't get over how dumb it is. You can't touch the sand in your back.
Oh, that's, trust me, if you actually,
that's the dumbest rule.
If you actually knew the rules of golf, I could find you 100 rules that make way less sense than that rule. There's so many. It's just, I mean, they were all made 100 years ago.
How does that help?
Golf has the problem of, much like baseball, they love the tradition and like, well, this is how it's always been, and so this is how it will always be. So there's so many rules that make no sense whatsoever, but they are still there. Because golf is afraid to be like, yeah, we should just take that away. That makes no sense.
I don't like that.
No replay. That's the main point. No replay. Doesn't matter if it's Major League Baseball. Doesn't matter what sport it is. No replay.
Yeah, Kelly's Braves got screwed last night. Controversial call. Hit us up, dearclint@thebeehive.com. Call us at that number. Text us at that number. Hit us up on social media at @TheBeehiveHQ. Use the hashtag dearclint. Tomorrow newsletter drops. Another one drops, dearclint.com. That's the show. Signing off for Chris Rawl, Kelly Jensen, and Weston Tanner. My name is Clint Betts, and this has been another episode of The Beehive.